This is Nicole Murphy from Mic Check Radio. And let me tell you, one of the best things about working for the Center for American Progress is that when there's an issue or an event that comes up on our political radar, all I have to do is pick up the phone and call one of the big-time smart people who also work at CAP to more fully understand the subject. 5 questions, 10 minutes, and I'm up to speed. And now you are too with Progress To Go's 5 questions with the experts. Now, Monday marks the celebration of Martin Luther King Day, a day where Americans take the time to remember what King did for our country and to continue his dream of peace, love, and justice. Now, while many people remember the dream Dr. King had of ending racial discrimination, many forget his efforts in fighting poverty across the country. So I decided to pick up the phone and call Sam Fullwood, a senior fellow at the Center for American Progress, and Melissa Botayak, who is a half in 10 manager at the Center for American Progress Action Fund, to discuss more on the issue. How's it going, guys?
Great. Glad to be with you.
Yeah, good to be with you all, too.
It's no secret. Poverty exists in America, and maybe even more so than what Dr. King tried to fight for back in the 60s. In fact, let's just listen to a short clip of what Dr. King had to say on the issue of poverty.
In this other America, millions of people are forced to live in dilapidated, substandard housing conditions where they do not have wall-to-wall carpet, but where they all too often have wall-to-wall rats and roaches.
You know, I think that clip truly portrayed how passionate King was on the issue of poverty in America, and a lot of people tend to overlook this issue because it happened during the last years of his life. Why do you think many people view this as a radical shift for the preacher to take during his civil rights movement?
Part of the reason is that most people do not remember that this was what he was talking about. When we sort of think about Dr. King, we sort of get frozen in time and we think about him on August 28, 1963, and then we rush immediately to 1968 and he's dead. Mm-hmm. There was a lot that was going on between 63 and 68 when he was assassinated. In November of 1967, he and his lieutenants at the Southern Christian Leadership Conference decided that they wanted to go in a different direction. They wanted to take the civil rights movement and expand it, to make it larger, because they saw a issue that was enormously troubling to them on moral grounds, and that was poverty in America. And Dr. King understood at that point that poverty knew no racial, no ethnic bounds, and he wanted to attack it across the board, white, black, Latino, Native American, Asian American. And so that was his whole, this grand scheme that he had, that in the spring of 68, he wanted to lead another march on Washington to give another speech to rouse the nation's conscience on the subject of poverty. Unfortunately, that didn't happen. And so the whole idea of King as being someone who was fighting against injustice and poverty, that part, the poverty part, got lost to a degree in history.
And can you explain a little bit about what King's true, I guess, dream of what it was in ending poverty? What was his stance on it?
Dr. King believed that poverty was inbred into the way in which we did business in America. And he thought that there needed to be a radical restructuring of really of the economic system that allowed for poverty to take place. And so he wanted to have what he called guaranteed income for all Americans, a baseline where no one would fall beneath it. And he wanted it keyed to a standard that the government would set of what it would take for a normal person and a family to have as a standard of living. That was an enormously unpopular position to take. It was one of the reasons that people branded him to be a communist, because they thought that that had sort of creeping socialist intent behind it.
But I think also another interesting thing about King's vision is that he saw how there needed to be an overall coordinated effort, that we couldn't attack a problem as comprehensive as poverty in a piecemeal way, but that we really needed to look at all the different ways in which poverty was interrelated, housing, education, income supports, job training, et cetera, and really have a comprehensive national plan, not take this piecemeal, as he says, I think a piecemeal pig meat approach. And I think on that, 40 years later, we can see that he's right.
Definitely. And what you were talking about, Melissa, about him, you know, looking at all aspects of American society to tackle poverty, something he said in 1967 that I thought was interesting was that there were twice as many white poor as black poor in the United States. And it kind of, you know, goes to your paper and how you guys talked about racial disparities, because now it seems like poverty's painted a different picture in America. Can you talk about some of those racial disparities that are now occurring in 2010 with poverty?
Sure. Well, the most recent data we have is for 2008, and we'll actually see in September of 2010 what the data look like for 2009. So there's a little bit of a delay there. But you can see there are entrenched racial disparities in poverty. In absolute terms, there are still more white people in poverty than there are blacks or Latinos in poverty. But the percentage-wise, the way that minorities are disproportionately affected and impacted is evidently clear if you look at the data. In 2008, 8.6% of whites were in poverty, but 24.7% of African Americans and 23.2% of Latinos lived in poverty. So you can see that there are, as Sam writes in the piece, very entrenched disparities there.
Going back to the paper, you guys also discussed how King understood that previous national efforts to end poverty were caused by a fundamental misunderstanding of the issue. What are ways that you both feel, you know, previous administrations have acted wrong when it comes to fighting poverty in America?
Well, I think Melissa mentioned it a minute ago when she talked about almost always, and King said in at this time, that what we attempt to do is to get the symptoms of poverty, so that if you give a person jobs, you think, well, okay, we've solved the problem, one part of homelessness. If a person has a house to live, you think we've solved one part of poverty. Never has the country sort of looked at it in a holistic approach. It is all interwoven. It's almost, if you can imagine it, sort of like a spider's web. You pull one strand, but the web will still be there. Poverty is kind of like that. Mm-hmm. What you got to do is sort of sweep the whole thing away and to replace that with a comprehensive plan that would make sure that people do not fall back into poverty simply because one string of it is gone.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's also a lot of administrations have not prioritized poverty reduction. In the last administration, the second Bush administration, we had massive tax cuts for the wealthiest Americans, but across the board cuts in social funding for, the lowest and middle income Americans. And that's a problem of mixed up priorities. And we see the results of that. Between 2001 and 2007, while the economy was growing and recovering, it was the first economic recovery on record where, despite growing profits and productivity, the number of people in poverty actually went up and the median income for Americans actually went down. And we had not before seen that on record.
So we've talked about past issues dealing with poverty and MLK and present issues that are now facing America with poverty, but let's take a look at the future. And one of the issues plaguing America now is jobs. I think that's affecting every American, whether you're in poverty or not in poverty, but it seems that the lack of jobs might be driving more people into poverty due to the lack of income. So what are some steps that you all feel Congress in the Obama administration can make in order to fight the poverty and unemployment issues which have been plaguing our country for years?
I think we need a three-pronged approach. The first thing we need to do is to ensure that the hardest hit communities are targeted when it comes to job creation. So there are a number of strategies to accomplish this. There's direct job creation. There is enormous need in communities, for example, for childcare workers or workers to weatherize homes. There are unmet construction needs and neighborhoods that need revitalizing. Why not take this opportunity to put people to work meeting needs in their own communities? And you sort of kill two birds with one stone. The second piece, I think, is aid to states and localities. If we don't act this year to extend some of the aid to states and localities, over 900,000 workers are expected to lose their jobs. That is going to stymie any effective economic recovery. And not only will these people lose their jobs, but these people are providing critical services. They're the ones who are administering a lot of the anti-poverty programs and programs for Main Street and communities across America. And so if we do not extend further aid to states and localities, we're going to sort of have a double whammy. First, you're going to have a lot of people lose good jobs. And second off, you're going to have huge cuts in services at a time when there's rising need. And the final piece is that we're lucky in this case that our moral sensitivities equate with what the economists are telling us needs to get done. One of the most effective ways to create jobs in an economic recession is to put money in the hands of people who need it most. These are people who may be unemployed and need unemployment insurance, someone who is on food stamps. economists, even conservative economists, are telling us that these have huge multiplier effects that ripple throughout the entire economy, spurring demand and putting money back into the economy so that small businesses are seeing returns on that and other employers.
And you know, Melissa, I think those are three good points that Congress and the Obama administration should take into consideration when trying to fight poverty issues in America. So again, we had Sam Fullwood, a senior fellow here at the Center for American Progress, and Melissa Boteach, who is the Half in 10 manager at the Center for American Progress Action Fund. And this is today's Progress to Go's five questions for the experts, where we pick up the phone and call someone plugged in to catch us up on the trickier issues facing Washington. Now, Progress to Go is a product of Mike Check Radio and the Center for American Progress Action Fund. So for these stories and more, check us out at MikeCheckRadio.org. Thanks for being here, guys.
Glad to be here.
Thank you for having me.